Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Blogger News on the Radio. My name is Simon Barrett, and I will be your host today. This is another in our ongoing series, Surviving the 21st Century, our weekly look at health and nutrition in our modern world. Joining me, as always, are my good friends, the husband and wife writing and research team of Manny Barling and Ashley Brooks. Hello to both of you.
Well, good morning and good afternoon to all our listeners.
Good morning.
I swear, I don't know where the time goes. I mean, this week has just flown by. I can't believe it's been 7 days since we were last on the air.
It's hard to believe, and I can't believe that Christmas has creeped up on so many of us. It's next Saturday, a week from today. And we promise all our listeners we will not be on Christmas Day or New Year's Day, so you get 2 weeks off to recover from us.
So Christmas stories will be told later in the show. We've got Christmas stories coming.
Right. Manny, we have a special guest joining us this week.
Let me tell you a little bit about her, Simon. You know, Ash and I, as you know, spend our Saturdays going to farmers markets.
In fact, wait a second. We leave this show, and we jump in the car and race to get to the farmers market to catch it right before it's closing.
Yes. And along the way of doing this for the last year or so, we've met some of those wonderful people you can imagine with so many wonderful stories. And what impresses us is their commitment. You know, we hear people in the genetically modified business saying, oh, you can't trust organic foods. But when you talk to these people and you hear their interest, their concern for others, their belief in what they're doing, and their stories, it's overwhelming. And we've invited one such person, Christy Murray, who runs Gunner and Jake's, which is gourmet pickles and peppers and the most unbelievable taste.
Little soup. There's an entire collection.
And we're going to let Christy talk about some of those. And Christy's going to underscore for us, one, how much better organic foods taste than genetically modified foods. When you have an organic pickle of hers, that's it for Vlasic and all these cheap brands. You'll never go back. And more importantly, she's going to tell us about why organic foods are so important to her and how they affect your life. Welcome, Christy. It's a pleasure to have you on.
Oh, thank you so much, Manny and Ashley. And hi, Simon. And hi, everybody.
Hi. Well, you know, let's start with the show. Before we talk a little bit about your background, let's talk a little bit about farmers markets. You know, okay. So much has been said about the food there. Talk to us about the effort that everybody goes in to bring the best quality foods to all the people who shop there.
Well, it's funny. I actually started farmers markets about 3 months ago, and I was really, really surprised not only how hard people work when they go to the farmers markets, but really the people who are there, the farmers, some of the farmers who are organic, they really, really take pride in their products, and you can really, really taste the difference when you have something organic versus something that's not organic. I can definitely taste the difference.
Of the things, Christy, we see, and I wonder if you notice it, is Ashley jokes that she needs a chainsaw to cut genetically modified broccoli in half. It's so hard, but you can cut the organic broccoli with a butter knife. Have you noticed that, too?
It's true, and you know what? You can always tell. I mean, just with me, and just because of my medical history and everything, we'll get into that. But what I see in the last couple months of going to the markets too is I can always tell with the organic products that are there, the crispness. Like when I pick up a green bean and I go to, you know, you can always tell if that is an organic green bean because of how crisp it is. If you can just snap it. That is a fresh, fresh organic green bean. You can taste it.
I also found that, say, Manny brought up the broccoli. One of the things I found with broccoli was I couldn't eat the skin of the broccoli. I was peeling it off. I was peeling on the genetically modified. I was peeling off asparagus. I just, and I didn't like the taste. The taste was, they all started tasting the same to me. And then I would feel sick afterwards if I tried juicing them. So one of the things I discovered with the farmer's market and the organic, which the propaganda, it's all the same. Well, it's not the same. And I'm able to eat the skins. And the skin is very important because it holds on to a lot of the vitamins, especially vitamin D, which comes from the sun.
Exactly. And you know what, you just really have to be knowledgeable when you go into the markets too, into the farmers markets. And, you know, and I get a lot of people asking a lot of questions at our booth, and there's a lot of educated people out there, I find, and they want to know. They want to know what they're putting in their body, and I would never, ever sell something that I myself could not put into my body or my kid's body.
Well, you know, Chris, you take a moment and tell us why you don't put this in your body and give us a little history of why you went to organic foods.
I went to organic food. I'll try to sum it up real quick. I actually was diagnosed at 16 with a very rare kidney disease called FSGS. It's or the other name for it is nephrotic syndrome. It's a very, very rare kidney disease. It's not genetic. It is the one disease of kidneys. The doctors do not know how you get it. They don't know how it comes on. There's no cure for it. Your eventual steps, doctors tell you, is, you know, you lead into kidney failure. And it not only affects one kidney, it affects both the kidneys. So when I was 16, I was always a healthy kid. My mom said I was never sick. I was never overweight. And, you know, to find out, and there was a cholesterol screening at our school going on, and they kept doing a cholesterol screening on me, and the nurse kept saying to me, your cholesterol is over 900.
Wow, and, are you kidding?
Jeez. No, and they kept doing it again, and then I was getting really nervous because, I was active. I was cheerleader. I was in track. I never sick, and, you know, I was like, what's going on? So they called my parents, and they told them to take me to the doctor. I went to the doctor at Akron General, and they found protein in my urine, which they thought I was diabetic. I was not. They thought I had lupus. I was not. And then they said, we're going to go one step further. We're going to do a biopsy on our kidneys. And that's when they discovered the disease that had they don't know how I got it, but it attacked both my kidneys, whatever was in my system, and it just formed scar tissue around both kidneys and punctured holes. And protein was seeping.
Just so you know, this FSGS, so I can talk to the audience a little bit, it's called focal segmental glomerulosclerosis.
Yes.
And what this stands for is a kidney disease, which is now, especially in the United States, it's become common in the United States. And at the time you became ill, Christy, is the time that genetically modified organisms or food, genetically engineered synthetic food, came out. And it's a very common disease in the United States. Mm-hmm. And not so much in Europe because Europe has banned any genetically organisms, but it's very common here. And it's sad that people are not told this.
Maybe we should start calling it Monsanto disease.
I think so.
Or as Greenpeace calls it, Monsatan disease.
Yeah, I just met with somebody last week from Greenpeace at Whole Foods, and that's one of the things they were saying.
Yeah,
But Christy, I'd like to throw something in. I had cancer surgery in 1997. It was diagnosed with Crohn's disease. And at the time, people said, gee, what do you have or what's your health problem? I'd say, I have Crohn's disease. And they'd go, what? What's that? And then now, you know, every day I learn somebody else who has Crohn's disease, and I see ads and everything else. But when I was diagnosed, it was the dark ages. And in your case, when you started this health problem, yes, it was really rare, but as the genetically modified foods took hold in the 90s and this decade, it has increased dramatically, as have kidney transplants. In fact, I joke, a friend of Ashley's made a comment that the longest line and the most important seat is at the chemotherapy room. Well,
it's called the hottest ticket in town because it's standing room only.
And I'll tell you, you know, it's hard to get tickets for things and line up for, and there's lists for everything in our country, but the quickest growing and the worst list in the United States is a list of people waiting for an organ transplant.
And one of the, I'm sorry, Christy.
No, I was just saying it is terrible. And I actually, before I had my transplant, I actually, you know, eventually was in kidney failure. But before I had my transplant, I had never met somebody who had had a transplant. After my transplant, I can't tell you how many people I hear now that have liver, kidney. And the girl, when I was in my recovery room, I was sharing a room with somebody at Cleveland Clinic. She actually not only had a liver transplant, she also had a kidney. And so it's more common. You hear about it more and more. And it's also, you know, people think that when you have a transplant like I did, that you're supposed to look sick. And I do take a lot of medicines, but I do believe that whatever I put in my body is going to cure my body. And I think that's with all foods. And whatever we put in our body, it's, you know, that's why we have cancers. That's why, the you know, people's kidneys are shutting down. That's why there's so many diabetics. I can't tell you how many kids in my son's school are diabetic, childhood diabetes. And it's sad that the parents, I think parents need to take control. They need to really, really enforce the water, having their kids drink the water. And my son, my little boy Gunner, he's a, you know, Mr. Wizard of all things. And
how old are your children?
My Gunner is 10 and Jake is 8. And
you weren't supposed to have kids, right? These are the miracle babies, because I've met them. I saw them at the farmer's market with you.
And they are cute.
They are my miracle babies. Actually, doctors diagnosed me at 16. They told me I would never be able to carry a child because of the protein loss, and that's what a baby needs when you're pregnant. And they tried to hammer it into my head for years, saying, you're not going to have a baby, Christy. And then I went on to deliver my first one, Gunner, in 1999. Of course, I had tons of problems, and my kidneys were a little bit acting up because of the pregnancy, but they also kind of used me as a guinea pig for women who have kidney disease who become pregnant, and they put me on a terrible drug called cyclosporin. And let me tell you, don't ever take that medicine, because it was the most horrible thing I had ever. I was pregnant, and it was just kind of like a test medicine to see how women react.
I have to say, hearing that part of it, Christy, these were miracle children, but these are beyond miracle children. The fact that they are so normal and they're so they're bright, they're quick, they're sweet. I mean, you are really very, very fortunate.
You know,
I kept believing. I mean, doctors came in. There were so many intricate things to my pregnancy and I was followed very closely. But actually, I had my first one out here at Cedars. And my OB was Dr. Renan, and he was out of St. Joe's, and then I went on to Cedars, and then they told me no more children after Gunner was born. He was 6 weeks, 3 pounds, 4 ounces. He only spent 10 days in NICU. He was beyond a miracle. He didn't come home on breathing machines, nothing. I brought him home the day of Thanksgiving in 1999, and when I had the cesarean for him, they actually wanted me to tie my tubes. The doctors came in and wanted me to sign something to say, you know, no more children, it's going to wear on your body. And I just believed that, you know what, there God had a bigger plan, and I wanted more kids. My mom said to me, she said, Christy, that's a big decision to make, you know. So I didn't do it, and then I found out, you know, the following, in 2001, I was pregnant with my second miracle baby, Jake. This one I had tons more problems early on, from like 14, 15 weeks when I found out I was pregnant. I had preeclampsia, toxemia. I was clotting. I had to have Dennis, my husband, had to give me heparin every day because of the blood clots. I actually started. I was in kidney failure during the pregnancy, and I was bed rest. And from 19 weeks on, and they finally delivered Jake at 26 weeks. He was 14 weeks early. He only weighed 1 pound 10 ounces and was 13 inches long. And he was a complete miracle. They refer to him at Cleveland Clinic as the miracle baby. They kept telling me my son was going to be slow and have developmental delays, and you know he was probably going to come home on a breathing machine. And the first day I delivered him, he had no lung tissue. They took an X-ray of his lungs, and there was no lung tissue, and that's why he had a breathing machine. The next day, it was completely miraculous. There was already lung tissue forming.
Oh my gosh, that's incredible.
And it was, these doctors were like, oh my gosh. And then the biggest thing that preemies run into at that age is when they're putting the little IVs into their little arms, they get infections very easily. Jake never got one. He literally just flew on by for 7 weeks in NICU, and I brought him home. He didn't come home on a breathing machine. Nothing. He was a perfectly healthy baby. I mean, he was tiny, don't get me wrong, but he was healthy. And after that, doctors came in and told me I was in complete kidney failure at 29 and that I needed a kidney. And
Christy, before I go any farther, I want to come back to something. You were talking about this horrible drug they gave you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I went through much the same thing, and it seems that when you're diagnosed with this kind of serious illness, it's like it's open season on you. They go, oh, well, they're probably not going to live, so let's experiment on you.
That's what happened to me in my 20s.
Yeah, and it's like they when they're done with you, if you're not careful, you're either a toxic chemical dump or you're dead. And people have a greater danger of dying of some of these prescription medicines than they do their own illness. And I wondered if you – did you feel the same way when you went through it?
I did. I actually, when I ask a lot of questions, and I think sometimes I actually have a really, really good doctor at Cedars. He's kind of taken over like a father role for me. I feel that since my dad has passed away, but because he knows I'm young and I have two little boys and I'm really proactive about my health and what I put in my body. And I remember when they had put me on this cyclosporin, I asked a lot of questions. And I think that everybody who goes into a doctor's office, if a doctor comes in and says, your levels, you know what, they're not too good. Well, what are they? You know, what's my red count? What's my white count? What's my creatinine? What's my BUN? I do ask those questions, and I think sometimes it irritates some of the people, the doctors that I talk to, but that's my right as a patient. I want to know what I'm dealing with. And if there's other methods that I can use, or if I can take supplements, or if I can change my food or take a probiotic, I'm going to do that. I'm not going to just say, oh, yeah, give me another medicine to take. Yeah,
I agree, and I have a thought for you when we bring it up. I make the doctors give me a copy of all my lab tests, and I keep a file of them.
Yep.
And sometimes I go back and I compare them. And recently, one of the things I noticed, because one of the things we advocate in our books are taking natural enzymes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I looked at some tests of mine that went back in the 90s in the file, or the somewhat faded tests, but it was amazing how many things were categorized as enzymes, as enzyme testing, that are now no longer called enzyme testing.
Mm-hmm.
And once I learned something about enzymes, I realized the doctors were well aware of all of this but never, ever discussed it with me. So I go down my blood tests and the ones that are supposedly high, which fortunately I don't have anymore, I go, well, what's this? What's this caused by? How do you solve this? What's your choice? Sadly, 99% of the time when you ask a question, their solution is always to give you a prescription. And I tell this story about going to a doctor with Ashley when she was seriously ill a couple of years ago. And if Ashley said, I had a cough, he goes, I got a prescription for that. And she said, gee, you know, this, he says, well, you must be a diabetic. He gave her a prescription for that. And at the end of this short doctor's appearance with a new expert she saw, who we obviously didn't care for, Ashley could have walked out with seven different prescriptions, including she had a problem where she lost her sense of taste. Doctors said, that's all right, we'll do this, what I would describe as a lobotomy. We'll stick a little pin.
But that's okay, that's close enough.
But it sounds like they're going to stick this needle up behind your eye and they're going to poke around your...
Up my nose, they're going to go up my nose,
oh,
remove just remove part of the pituitary, I won't ever miss it. Okay. You know, thank God I'm a nurse, because there's no way I took any of these seven prescriptions.
Yeah.
I went to another doctor to fasting blood sugar. My blood sugar was 90, which was well within normal.
Yeah.
I wouldn't end any of these medicines, because I already had kidney, liver, and pancreas problems, would have killed me.
Yeah.
Now,
so,
what did Ashley...
Chris, I was just going to ask you this question. In our experiences, everyone we talked to say they, too, are offered the most extreme solutions to their health problems. And I wonder if you agree, as you went along listening to the doctors, they wanted you to follow them with blind faith, but the solutions they were offering were extraordinarily drastic. Did you find that too?
I did, and I felt that, you know, for me in my life, when you're sitting in a hospital room and you're alone, and because of my hospital stays and over the course of the time that I've spent in the hospital, for me, my faith, you know, I would pray and I would just say, you know, please, you know, help me, God. You know, I have two little boys. I really want to live. And I remember when they were not, they actually put in my records that I was non-compliant. Because
oh, you and I talked about that. Remember how
yes.
I said to you when you and I talked earlier in the week, I was very, very ill in my 20s, and I had been in intensive care and on chemo for 2 years, off and on, in and out of a coma. And I, at one point, they sent in a psychiatrist to see me because I wasn't accepting my death.
Yes.
And I, of course, sent him out of the room like, are you insane? I'm in my 20s. You're not accepting your death. Okay, I think you need to see the shrink.
Actually, you're a
miracle. Mind, body, and spirit work together. And you need those three elements working together. And if you're going to go in and knock somebody's spirit out and go, hey, you're not accepting your death, well, okay.
I have to add this. This non-compliant, I thought, was an Ohio thing until you told me this, because it was, and I'm going to ask you, Dennis, would this happen in Akron? Because 15 years after Ash and I were married, her parents said to me, I made a comment about Ashley leaving and da-da-da, and the response to me was, Ashley was always non-compliant. And I said to myself, non-compliant, she's out of college, she's got a license, and she's moving to Chicago to get away from the craziness in the family, and she's non-compliant? So
exactly.
I wondered, was that the Ohio hospital that told you that?
No, actually what they said to me was, my parents said was, I had a retarded sister, and they said, I thought you would be compliant like your sister.
Well, that's what they said to you, but that's not what they said to me.
Okay.
So I want to know, Simon,
what?
I have to ask a question. I've been sat here mulling it over for a couple of minutes. You, all three of you, are saying the same thing. You know, do not, you know, be led blindly by your doctors. But the problem is that most people have no clue how to read a blood test.
Mm-hmm.
Is there like a blood test for dummies guide?
Well, yes, the internet. There isn't anything that you can take off a blood test, type into your internet search, and not get 100 articles on. Some are too technical, but some are very, very simple. You've got the obvious ones like WebMD, which always preach corporate medicine, but you get the other sites. There's one that I like if you want to know what the ingredients are in foods, called truthandlabeling.org, run by Dr. Adrian and Jack Samuels, will tell you everything in food and how it affects you. And there are other sites that take that with blood, creatinine, which is important in your kidneys. There's 80,000 explanations on what cholesterol means, and very few of them agree. So you've got to sort through an awful lot of that.
But we did a lot of that in our books. We did as simply as we can in the books. We took all of the body as a whole, and took all 4,000 research articles, and then we broke them down to make it easy for people. And maybe the next time we do a second edition, we need to add more blood tests in. But we include blood tests in it. We include pH. We include acid-base imbalance, which is like something you'll hear at the doctor's office.
Yes.
We include checking blood pressure. We give lists of foods for your alkaline foods to keep your body pH balanced. And there's whole charts in there that actually will help people as simply as they can to walk through this.
And you're right.
Okay, let me ask this. I know you'll laugh at me. Is this a subject that should be taught in school?
Absolutely.
So
that people have the tools, if you will. So if they do get sick, they know the questions to ask.
Well, you know, Simon, I look at school like this. Kids get 7-8 different classes a day. They go to school, at least to the 12th grade, some less sadly. And they take all these courses. Most of them they never use in their life. But teaching health from first grade on, And I don't mean corporate health. Take a pill, take a pill.
To the pyramid thing. Do your RDA, which, I mean, the whole game behind RDA. Christy, we did another show which was on RDA, and that's a whole game.
Yeah, which is the recommended daily allowances. But Simon, your point is well taken. We could save millions in medical costs. We could save millions in insurance costs. And we could extend life, and we could save people the kind of pain and suffering that both Christy and I've gone through.
And myself.
And Ashley.
And had I known what I now know, and I didn't even know a lot of this stuff, and I should have known, but it was like blocked because, you know, see the doctor, go take a drug, and like anything, taking a drug is a synthetic. It's a synthetic thing that either blocks, and many of them are enzyme inhibitors. They block, they change, they alter the enzymes in your body. So it's actually harming the body in many respects because your body can't break it down.
So, right. Simon, does that
I wanted to add one more thing, Simon, to what you said about teaching kids in schools. The one thing that I really tried to enforce with both my boys, and I was telling Ashley about this, too, a couple days ago, is that real-life experiences, when you actually live through something, my sister at one point had told me that it was too traumatic for my boys to be seen, you know, because I take them to all the doctor's appointments. They go to every farmer's market with us, and we teach them about business and about life. And life.
You have an amazing
always,
family.
Yeah, it's just, thank you so much. It's not going to be easy, you know, and when I have to get out my bag of pills in the morning, I have to take, you know, 25 medicines a day. You know, Gunnar, what came up to me, and he said, you know, Mommy, you know, what are those for? And I said, well, this is the immune suppressant medicines that Mommy has to take for Mommy to live right now until we can find a cure for something that, you know, maybe I'm definitely going to look into the enzyme thing, Ashley.
You would need to talk to your doctor about it because one of the things that they do with the medicine is they're synthetic and they inhibit. Like one of the things they inhibit is renin, and they want to keep it suppressed because on the kidneys are your adrenals. The renin is part of that adrenal, and so they try to inhibit that. So it's something that if you could bring these books into your doctor and work through them with your doctor, you may have an adjustment with your medication, but it's really important that you work with him because of having a kidney transplant and the type of medicines that you're on, it's really a different program for you. And I would absolutely go with a homeopathic doctor that could work with you. We also had a Dr. Dantini on for several weeks who is at the Sage Medical Lab, and he may also work with you to let you know what foods are giving you a negative effect.
Okay,
and
definitely.
Help you work through so that you actually can work the diet with your doctors with the food and will extend your life.
Yeah, and you know, my kids, I try to enforce, I think that they need to educate kids more in the schools. I think that once you go through something, until somebody goes through something maybe life-threatening, that's when they maybe wake up. But I think it needs to happen way before when the kids are really, really little. And I try to teach my kids about, you know, cooking with this, and we don't use preservatives, and we have to use organic. You know, it's not sprayed. You know, we don't know, you know, where that came from. We want everything organic, too, because it's not sprayed with all those pesticides and all those chemicals that are going into our body. And I think the pesticides are causing not only some of the kids to be overweight, it's just not being educated. And I just really want to enforce with especially my boys and all kids that, you know what, you control what you put in your body, and you can either heal your body or you can hurt your body. If you're going to eat pork every single day, you know, that's not good. It's just not good, you know, to eat pork all the time. And it's when I went in to see my dietitian, that's the first thing she said to me, and Ashley, I think you had told me too, that, you know, she used the word inflammatory. And I didn't realize at the time, and I'm glad I met you guys, and you guys have me on the show, and I'm learning so much because I really, really want to get even more educated about what I can do to stop the progression of whatever's going on with my body right now and just heal my body through natural remedies, not through all these medicines. I mean, we pray for a cure for this disease so people don't have to take all these medicines. And I was telling you the other day that I was taking a blood pressure medicine. Well, I don't have high blood pressure. And
they do that as a precautionary, and I agree with you. It's like, you know,
yeah,
it's sitting down. It's finding the time, making your doctor, and this to me is making the visit the best. First of all, you need to go in there armed. And you go in there armed by saying, okay, I'm going to go look up each one of these drugs. I'm going to look up their side effects. I'm going to understand that I can't take these all at the same time because there's interactions that happen that you may not want, which doctors don't tell you.
Right.
You may want to break it up over a course of a day as opposed to 25 all at one setting, you know, because, again, when they check these medicines in the lab, they go, this one works, this one works, this one works. But they have not tested this one, and this one together in a test tube, and you become the test tube that's taking that all at the same time.
Right.
You may want to bring in all these medicines, talk to the doctor and say this, this, and this, and this. And I'm not just talking to you, Chrissy. I'm talking to people in the listeners, because then you can see I have this side effect. I have that side effect. This is what's going on in my body. Now, the doctor doesn't live in your body. You know how your body feels.
Right.
And by daily charting. Every day, take a pencil and a paper, start at the top of your head, work your way down, and make a note in a chart. And just say, I have puffy legs today, I have puffiness under my eyes, dark circles, you know, so he can actually see, because doctors are used to working with notes. And you now are coming in and going to make the maximum you can with that doctor visit by sitting there with him so he can see you and see how you're progressing. For you, because you have kidneys and kidney problems, you may even want to measure how much water you take in for the day, how much you're putting out.
Yes.
You may want to take a little cup and just, like, start measuring it. And then you can see how your filtration's working.
I just had to do a test for that, and I was amazed at how much I output. I had to do a 24-hour collection just recently for something that's going on with my kidneys. And I think another thing that people have to do, not only do they come in with the doctor armed, but I think when a doctor says a diagnosis to you, I think the reason they kept saying that I was non-compliant and she's not listening and she's not doing that is people, they go out of the office maybe with a diagnosis feeling defeated. And when a doctor would say something to me, oh, you're going to be in kidney failure, I'd say, no, I'm not. Or when they said, you're not going to have kids, I just kept believing that, you know what, that I truly believed that God had a bigger plan and I was going to have kids. And if I, you know, I honestly never, ever could have estimated in my life that I would ever needed a kidney transplant, ever. It was never something that I believed. I was in full denial. They wanted to put a fistula in my arm for dialysis. I missed 3 appointments. My doctor was screaming at me at the Cleveland Clinic, and he said, you know, you're messing with fire, Chrissy. I said, but that's going to be permanently implanted in my arm, and, you know, I'm going to get it. What if I get an infection, and what if my kids pull on the cord, or, you know, because I had 2 little kids at the time, and he said, well, you know what, you're messing with fire. Your heart could stop, and I said, I don't believe that that's going to happen, And you know, I don't think that God's going to take a mother away from her kids. And I refused it. So for the year that I waited for the kidney, I was sick. I was throwing up. I refused dialysis. My creatinine was at an 8.7, and my BUN was at a 157, which is, if people really, and that's why with creatinine, if anyone who's listening, your creatinine is your kidney function, the function of your kidney. And, you know, it should be right around, it shouldn't be any higher than, I think it's like 0.1 to like 1.2, I think it is normal.
That's correct, yeah.
So I think that, and when you have a BUN, the BUN is like all the toxins that are staying in your body. And, you know, I think normal is like 0 to 25. Mine was at like 157, and I was really sick. And I didn't have dialysis.
When you were waiting, because this is what I found when I was sick. First of all, when I was really sick in my 20s,
I also went into complete kidney failure, and they said I had scarring, and they wanted to put me on dialysis at the time, and I was very, very sick. Obviously, I was in and out of a coma, and what I discovered was once I started juicing, and at that time it was okay to juice because they weren't GMO. I juiced, and I have a specific formula that I do that helps both my liver and my kidneys, and I do it daily. And because of that, I was able to overcome a lot of what was going on. But what I discovered was I was left on my own.
Mm-hmm.
From then until I became ill again 4 years ago, but there's a large window between, you
right.
know, them doing this and that, you know, and I still have my kidneys, and even though I went into kidney failure, I've been able to pull myself back out by using the enzymes. Now, what I found is nobody would talk to me. There was no window of anybody actually giving me any direction or help. No one helped me with Manny. No one helped me with myself. And I think a lot of people are out there, you know, as Manny said, you know, here's your prescription. Now, I don't know what, did they give you a prescription or did you find this too, that they just sort of left you out there on your own after 16?
They kind of just were placing a lot of words on me, speaking, you know, trying to hammer in my head, you won't have kids, you're going to be in kidney failure by 20. Actually, they had predicted I would be in failure by 20.
Did they give you medicine during that time?
Yeah, they did. I've been on medicine since I've been 16, so I've been on medicine for 20 years right now. And
this is again me speaking out, okay, out to the listeners. For me, what I have discovered with studying 130 years worth of research of enzymes, which Manny and I have extensively done and cover in our books. And again, this is not us. This is medical doctors and research teams who have independent research. The problem with the kidneys, to me, is immediately, as soon as somebody says they have a disease like this, FSGS, they immediately put people on renin suppressant, which is a suppressant that actually blocks the enzyme that is critical to the body.
Oh.
And they do this because they want to monitor and keep the blood pressure to keep the blood pressure low, because the renin affects the blood pressure, affects the endocrine system. And just for a quick anatomy, simple anatomy, we're going to go, if we went looked at the body backwards, upside down, you would say the abdominal aorta, which is part of the heart, major part, 20% of that goes into the kidneys. So they're trying to balance all that, and they do that by giving people renin suppressants. As opposed to, this is my theory, my thinking, our theory based on the years of research and what have absolutely worked for us. Now, for you, it's a different story because you've had this transplant.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking to
but
patients.
But it's still possible. I still could do it. I could still take the enzymes, and I'm going to get the book and talk to you more.
But talk to your doctor about it, though, because with the renin suppressant, that's a problem. That could be a problem. Because for me, then, I was able to do the enzymes so that my body would heal itself and start functioning on its own, and it does eliminate a lot of the scar tissue.
Yes, mm-hmm. In my case, I had a scarred bladder. The first year after my surgery, I passed over 25 kidney stones, which is horribly painful and difficult.
Oh.
I actually stopped counting it at some point. I can hear Simon moaning in the bathroom.
Oh, my God. He would get a look on his face, Simon. You know, oh, my gosh. He'd get a look on his face, go to bed, and I wouldn't see him again for a while.
Yeah,
I heard
know,
it's very painful
as,
for a man.
It's just horrible. But coming back to it for a moment, and now, honey, I forgot what I was going to say about. Oh, yes, over a period of time, I've been on enzymes a few years since I started writing the book and experimenting. And I found it cured, not cured, but it healed all the scars in my bladder that were affecting my abilities. And it's cured, not cured, but I wouldn't call it cured. What it does is it rejuvenates your organs. And one of the things that happens with enzymes, which is why you need to consider it, is it buffers the side effects to prescription drugs. So when you take them, drugs that had weird side effects that made me sick as a dog didn't affect me afterwards. And that alone is a seriously good reason to take them to avoid all of that. But at the same time, as Ashley points out, you have some unique problems that you need to sit down and address. But all things being equal, nothing changes anyone's life quicker than the enzymes do. And I point to my best friend who I repeatedly tell the story had a heart attack 2 years ago, and the doctors had him up to 9 drugs, told him he was a diabetic and it would be for life and all the rest of it. And 4 or 5 months on Manny's diet of enzymes and all the rest of it, he was down to 1 drug. Doctors admitted he was no longer a diabetic, and his cholesterol dropped down to 175. And I tell the story that he didn't want to tell his girlfriend or doctor that he wasn't taking the cholesterol drug anymore. He was taking some of the things we talk about in our book. And finally, after 6 months of the doctor bragging about how effective Lipitor was, he finally says, you know, Doc, I stopped taking it 5 months ago. I'm taking something else. And as we joke, the first thing the doctor said to him is, oh, no, you can't do that. You have to go back on the drug.
Yeah, his body was functioning so well. He went from being short of breath and barely able to walk across the room to losing 30 pounds, which he needed to lose and couldn't lose based on the fact that his body wasn't functioning properly.
And prescription drugs.
And then he's now, you know, he's out running around with his girlfriend, and he's 72 years old now.
No, he'll be 74 in
January.
Oh,
he doesn't want to hear that on the air, huh?
I know.
He's allowed that extra couple years.
But he's my friend, and I like to torment him.
Yeah. That's a great story.
You know, now that you've lived in the Valley all this life, at the time, you understand Valley boys. They like to torment. Right, right, Simon?
Absolutely.
So, Simon, jump back in. You're in the periphery of this, and you don't have these kind of health problems. Did these things bother you when you hear what doctors do with people?
Oh, bothers me enormously. But, you know, I go back to the basic issue of people are not well educated. And I don't mean that in a bad way, but I mean...
it's intentional, though. I think mm-hmm. that it's intentional in the medical schools. It's intentional in the nursing schools. I think it's intentional because the biggest funds are coming from pharmaceutical drug companies. Mm-hmm. And they go in and they fund these schools, and they fund the nutrition schools, and they fund your RDAs, and they fund lobbyists at the governmental level, and the whole thing comes down to which drug can I give you? And again, I keep repeating this, is the body's a whole, the body is intended to have these organs that work together, and what's missing?
Mm-hmm.
Christy, I would like to find out a little bit more about Gunnar and Jake's. What do you do? Tell us a little bit about your company.
Well, after everything that's happened in my life and the blessings and just the miracles I thought that I've had and I've gone through and the struggles, I love to cook, and I love to cook with good food, organic food. And I grew up canning things in Ohio, and go Buckeyes!
Yeah, right, there you go.
So I grew up in Canton, Ohio. I was born and raised. And we would can things. I mean, we used the freshest products. We did have farmers out there, and we don't know if their things back then were organic. But I'll tell you what, the things that I had back there were the freshest of the fresh, and we would always go to the same fields. And I started a company a year ago, and I actually just went into farmers markets 3 months ago. We're currently.
And you and I just met like a month ago, right?
Yes,
about a month ago.
We met in the Calabasas Farmers Market, and
you had a big, huge tray of cut pickles and different things that you have that are got me addicted.
The name of the company is called Gunnar and Jake's Gourmet Pickles and Peppers, and we also do a line of gourmet foods. I don't use any preservatives in my food. All of my food is organic, and I am going to become organically certified from the state. I just filled out my application, and I'm sending that in. And we actually have a line of gourmet dill pickles, which we use organic garlic, organic dill, and they're delicious. We do use kosher salt to cut back on our sodium because, we can't have all that salt in our body. And the pickles, definitely by far one of our best sellers are our pickles. And you know what? You don't need a lot of salt to have flavor to something. You can use other things. You can use dill. You can use garlic and other things to flavor things naturally, and you don't have to color it. You know, a lot of the, I did some research when I was in the markets for about a year, and everything in the market, you know, had, all the pickles had yellow number 5, which it was a dye to color the pickles.
Now, you weren't here for this show, so I've got to say this. Dr. Dantini and I had a conversation. We all had a conversation with him. I said, you know, my mom used to say this red dye and yellow dye were banned, and I'm confused because it's in everything. Mm-hmm. So Dr. Dantini proceeded to say, well, the FDA said, yes, it's banned, but as long as it exists, is when it runs out, then you can stop putting this carcinogen, which means it causes cancer.
Yep.
In the food. And so they have warehouses, 40, 50 years worth of this dye that they're continuing to put in people's food.
It's disgusting. And you know what? That's not how the food is supposed to be. A pickle is supposed to look like a pickle. Like, you know, it's not supposed to be colored yellow. It's not supposed to be, there's not supposed to be any of that sodium, benzonite, or whatever they put in a lot of the products. And you know, all of our products, we do Hungarian pickled peppers. We do a stuffed jalapeno.
Oh, no, those are one of my favorites, by the way.
And I grew up on those. We just use those on sandwiches. We also do a pickled green bean. We do pickled beets. We use absolutely no sugar in any of our products. We use apple cider vinegar in our beets. We do a stuffed jalapeno with prosciutto and cheese, or we just do it with cheese for people who don't eat, you know, meat. And we also do a pickled turnip, and we also have homemade marinara sauce. We have a fresh, oh, Ashley, you're going to have to try the sauerkraut soup.
It's a weakness from Ohio.
I want you to know, I'm sitting here and going, what is with these women from Ohio?
I'm not the
only one who has a weird wife from Ohio. What is
okay.
I'm telling you, last night we sat on the couch and he said, you know, hon, you really need to cut the sauerkraut out. I really think that you're just eating too much sauerkraut. Well, there you go, honey. That's where it comes from.
And
well,
you know what,
if I didn't know you were someone else's wife, I would think you were mine.
Manny, you don't know how good sauerkraut is for you. It's cabbage.
Thank you.
But Ashley has your limitations. She has one functioning kidney, and even that one can get pretty dicey at times.
But I keep the enzymes going, and I'm fine. And the problem with cabbage is that it has the same properties as soy, and in the fact that you should only eat a small amount at a time, which because it blocks the thyroid, blocks the iodine, which affects the thyroid, that affects the pituitary and the hypothalamus, because those guys are cousins in your body, and they work together and affect your metabolism.
Well,
so sauerkraut is something you can only eat small at a time.
So I have an important question for you here. Is there something in the water in Ohio that makes girls eat weird food?
I think so. Say yes, please.
It's a state. Let me tell you, when I was growing up, it's a state. It's a meat and potato kind of state, and I do believe that, you know, when I moved from Ohio to California, I was in a shock because I had never seen more fit people in my life when I moved here.
Oh, yeah.
Isn't it the truth? That's so true.
I'm just saying that we do not get a lot of the produce. When I was growing up, I had never had a turnip. We didn't get the jalapenos. We didn't get the pomegranates. We didn't get the things that California produce has out here. And my mom, though, is a great, great cook, and she makes everything homemade, too. And I learned a lot from, you know, my mom. And then I just wanted to formulate. I wanted to, Simon, going back to your question, I wanted to, the inspiration for Gunnar and Jake's, for the name of the company, is because of the blessings. And I wanted to pass on something great to Gunnar and Jake, and a legacy and a tradition of food and family and love and, you know, keeping, you know, our sodium level down. And flavoring food with, or you know, like organic stuff, organic garlic, organic dill, and, you know, organic jalapenos even, and keep everything to them, pass it on to them to let them know how much not only, you know, I love them, but, I want to live for them. I want to see them grow up. I don't want to keep taking all these medicines. I, you know, and my will to live is even stronger, and I'm very hopeful. If a doctor says something to me as he's speaking to me, I'm binding up his words and I'm saying no. You know, I believe that doctor, you know, I'm going to have a miracle and I'm going to live till I'm, you know, 80, 90 years old. So, you know, my kids, they're really aware. They're really engaging. They love talking with people. They learn a lot. It's something they can't learn at school when you take them to farmers market and they're actually talking to people and they know all the products. They know
right.
all the products. They help me cook.
Now, where do you cook this? You've got a big warehouse or something? I mean, how do you
No,
cook
we it? Actually we actually have a commercial kitchen where we live, and we currently rent that. And but we're actually right now looking. We're going to be opening a storefront called Gunner and Jake's Gourmet Foods. And then we actually just got a call about 6 weeks ago from Whole Foods.
Congratulations.
Thank you. So we will be soon going into the Whole Foods out of Valencia. That will be the first location. And then we'll be going into two other locations. And then eventually they, you know, I do think that Gunner and Jake's will be on shelves across the country. And it will become a household name.
I have to ask this question because of my heritage. And any chance of organic pickled onions?
Oh, I do those at home.
You know what? I get my supply of my organic onions from Whole Foods, and we have a garden mix, and it has, I use organic cauliflower, red pepper, and I actually use the organic pearl onions from Whole Foods.
See, you have to come to California now, Simon. You and Jim.
Oh, and by the way, Simon, I think you've explained my problem. Ash will tell you, I make pickled cucumbers and onions, and my mother made them endlessly when I was a kid. And if that isn't a British tradition, I don't know one. Am I correct? That's a big thing?
You are correct.
Well, here, I'm going to have to start doing that now, Simon.
Yeah, there
right.
you go. Just add that to the list.
Oh,
nothing beats a good
pickled
onion.
Come over to the house and I'll make some for you, Chrissy. I'm telling you, you will love them.
Oh, I love to learn from other people. I love going to farmers markets and talking to people, and I love hearing people's stories. And I love, I just met a woman in Malibu at the Malibu Farmers Market. And, you know, and when you hear people who have medical problems and, you know, when a woman came up to my booth and told me she was on dialysis and waiting for a kidney, I got very emotional. And, you know, I held her hand and I, you know, I just told her, I said, you know, never give up hope. And you know what, where there's a will, there will be a way. And she, you know, she was a diabetic. Her kidney disease came on from her diabetes. And it's just one of the stories. I met another woman at another farmer's market who her husband was going into septic shock, where his organs were shutting down and doctors could not explain it. And since this woman has told me about this, I have heard more and more people, and people don't know why people are going into septic shock, like their organs are shutting down and then they're just coming out of it. You know, they're going into it and they're saying, oh my gosh, all their organs are shutting down. And then a couple of days later, they're getting better. But what is causing people to go into septic shock where their organs
are shutting
down?
One of the things that we talked about again was the fact that with the GMO, they have, for me, every single symptom that I had was complete organ failure, including my spleen being three times its normal size and doctors saying, there's nothing wrong with you, you're perfectly fine. Thank God I was in Germany, because the German doctors made me well.
Mm-hmm.
Every single one of my symptoms were identical to two things. The GMO, which is in every single thing and every single package and every single restaurant, and unless it says organic, it's genetically modified, which contains the cauliflower virus, which has an RNA similar to leukemia, HIV, and something else. And then it's a promoter virus that actually works with this BT toxin. So this is what people are getting in their food every single day. You can't wash it out of the food. Mm-hmm. Identical symptoms. While the market never marked on it since 1989, 1990, they never put on this food that this is genetically engineered, genetically modified. They just threw it in our food system.
God.
So, and the other thing is that with high fructose corn syrup, which is in everything, the corn syrup is also genetically modified. Its side effect is that it causes liver failure, and it causes a fatty liver, which is the beginning stages of liver failure.
Mm-hmm.
So people are actually having organ failure due to the healthy food they're eating every day, which is not healthy.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big fat lie in this country, which is why millions of people banned it, and medical professionals banned our food in Europe. You can't buy GMO food, and you can't buy the GMO soy in Japan. And thank God for Greenpeace, because it's now getting banned in India. Very soon Monsanto is going to be shown for who they are in creating this horrible food.
Mm-hmm.
So when you talk to people at the farmer's market, it's very important to tell them about that.
Mm-hmm.
Let's take a shameless commercial break here. Manny and Ashley, you guys have mentioned your books a couple of times on the program. What are they, and where can people buy them?
Well, we have two books out now, Arthritis, Inflammation, Gout, Crohn's, IBD, and IBS, which and Manny's Diet and Enzyme Formula, which you can get at our site, either mannysdietbook.com or howtoeliminatepain.com, or they're available in our Amazon, Barnes & Noble, about 40 other bookstores. We found some new ones in Australia, and, of course, there's a Chinese one. I tried to translate the review of our book, and it came out that I ordered pizza in a small place in Beijing, so I wasn't very successful. But the books are available. And
joking.
I'm joking, actually. But within 2 weeks, our fourth book, which is called It's Not Your Fault, which Christy goes to your subject about what's making children fat, what's causing childhood diseases, and a variety of other things will be out. And it chronicles how children got this heavy and why we have obesity in our country and what people can do to stop. And primarily what we're advocating is a chemical-free diet and suggesting to people what they need to do is to get off these high fructose corn syrups, the MSG, and all these things that are put into food to chemically addict people. And the addiction is just like nicotine, alcohol, and drugs. Once these kids start eating all the MSG and foods at McDonald's, they start drooling, and that's all they want.
And the government knows this because the rat studies, which were done on a lot of these, actually they give them these additives to make the rats fat to check on the adipose tissue, the fat tissue.
Yeah,
I mean, it's insane.
The government's known this forever.
Right.
And
Chris,
I want to
Christy,
come back when you're done. If we're done with the promotion, remind me
no,
to come
no,
back.
We're not,
you know,
we're not done with the promotion.
Oh, okay, go back to being shameless.
Right. All right. We're back to shameless commercial break. Christy, where can people buy your products? Do you have a website? Or?
We do have a website. Our website is www.gunnarandjake.com. That's GunnarandJake.com. They can purchase the items online, and we also are available in California farmers markets, Calabasas, Brentwood, and Malibu. And then we also will be going into Whole Foods. We're just getting all of our papers finalized, and we should be in there very shortly.
Okay, and we're going to do one more shameless commercial before we get back to the subject. On Tuesday, Manny, Ashley, and myself will be striking out in a slightly different direction. Manny, do you want to warn the listeners of what they might be up against?
Oh, my goodness. You want me to talk about our new show? It's funny. I was just looking for that note that I'd sent you. We've created a show, and it's called The Wackiest News Stories of the Week. And each week, we're going to review the totally inane, stupid, and things that people do. For 2011, it really has been a banner year for stupid news. It just seems that people, given a choice in life, will do the dumbest and oftentimes the funniest things imaginable. Some of them can't even be imagined. You know, wacky news is a lot like a 60s show called That Was the Week That Was. So in tribute to those whose efforts at creating dumb, stupid, or funny moments that have gone largely unnoticed in 2011, we're going to honor them with a two-part end-of-the-year look at all these terrible things. among our first shows, we will honor the flashing chief of police whose tireless efforts to leave his naked photos on jogging trails put him in the local news. Today, Simon, I learned that they can't find him in Southern California. Christy is from Orange County. Because he's in Europe teaching other policemen. So Ash and I are wondering, is he teaching them how to correctly post his photo of his genitalia on a post? So
how to take the best photo.
I mean, really, I would be embarrassed to do that. This guy's dying to do it. How about you, Simon? Would you do that? I mean, that's crazy.
And I accuse him. Sorry, go ahead,
I don't. I don't think I'd go that route.
And our other stories include such wonderful things as stories of the disabled guy who got in his little disabled vehicle because he heard a noise out in the bushes on his farm and shot what he thought were a couple of foxes, and it turned out to be two cannabis thieves who were trying to steal 50 cannabis plants from a warehouse on the property adjacent to him that he didn't know were growing marijuana. But I want you to know that the chief of police was so worried about marijuana growers, they took his guns away and revoked his permits. So these are the kind of stories that we're going to offer. And our first guest will be Arlene Sedaris, who a longtime movie producer who is married to Andy Sedaris, who is the Emmy Award-winning director of the Munich Olympics, who was really the founder of college football, the original director on Monday Night Live. He invented instant replay, and she's going to charm us with stories of Dandy Don Meredith, who died last week, and a variety of other things. So tune in next week. On Tuesday, we promise to entertain you. And if you haven't seen these stories in your news, we guarantee you.
And if you have news stories, please call them in. If there's anywhere out there, any place in the entire United States or Europe, please call in.
Yeah, if you've got wacky news, we want to hear it. And I want to give a shout-out to our friend Sue McKinney, who's a lawyer in Vietnam, who sent me an email saying she can't wait for the show on Tuesday to hear these stories. And right now, people need some humor, and there's no greater humor than the dumb, stupid things that Americans do in their spare time.
Or anywhere in the world. People, human beings.
Yeah, but people are so good at it. Okay.
Hey, Simon, they're professional at it.
Okay.
And one of my favorites we're going to get into is the burglar who hit the 9/11 on his phone and proceeded.
Oh, but wait till Tuesday. Don't tell him anymore.
And proceeded to tell the police all sorts of things. So those are your clues for this week. So tune in and hear the rest of these stories.
Okay. Enough of the commercials. let's get back to the plot. A frequent comment that I hear from people is, "I can't afford to buy organic." Is that really a valid argument?
Well, let me jump in with two things, and Christy, you can respond. You know, there's a series of tests people can find on the Internet, and the two best known was one conducted by University of Wisconsin, the other one by University of Arkansas, to make it very clear that the cost of genetically modified wheat, corn, all of these various vegetables is more than growing it organically. Not only does it cost dramatically more, but the fact is they get a higher volume in organic growing than you do with the genetically modified foods. So, first of all, coming out the door is cheaper. Second of all, without even considering the health issues, oftentimes, I'll give you an example. Ashley buys organic potatoes. They're $1 each at the farmer's market. You go to, like, Gelson's, a very expensive market, more to the other extreme, and they're getting $5 each for a genetically modified potato. So if you shop correctly, you can buy genetically modified food. You'll find genetically modified food is far more expensive than organic food, without taking into consideration the taste, the lack of medical bills, the health of your children. The minute your child's diagnosed with childhood diabetes, whatever money you think you're saving on genetically modified food is out the door. So, Christy, do you want to reflect on that?
Yeah, I agree. I think that people are under the assumption that, you know, organic food is, you know, much, much more expensive, but you know, I disagree with that. I think a lot of people say, I don't think they make excuses, but I think that they think that something organic is more expensive, where It's not, actually. And if you go to the farmers markets or if you go to a Whole Foods or a Galson's, you'll find all my dill, organic dill, comes from Whole Foods. And it's only $1.99 for a bunch. You get a huge, I mean, it's a massive amount. You go to a regular grocery store, and they have a little plastic container, and it's not organic.
And it's always in the wrong containers.
Yeah.
They don't even care about what containers they put in when it's absorbed into the food. So you get pesticides plus that.
Yeah, I mean, it's only like, 6 ounces, I think, and it's like $2.49. But you can go to, you know, a Whole Foods or you can go to the farmer's market. You can get a huge fresh bunch of, you know, and it's $1 or $2. So I just think that people are under the impression it's no one's fault that, you know, but I think as I, you know, learn more and more and when I see, you know, I was just in Whole Foods the other day again, too, and they had organic mushrooms. You know, mushrooms are expensive, and, you know, they were only $2.
Oh, that's what I've been doing. And our bills have cut, I'd say, in half since I went completely organic. First of all, we don't want to overeat. We don't even want seconds because it's so satisfying to have this tasteful, fabulous meal that the body feels good. It feels good and you're full. And as opposed to that MSG and crap that's in that other food, you just want to eat all the time. Plus, worse than that, the genetically modified foods have, what's the percentage again, Manny? 86%?
It has, 86% less nutrients.
So people then want to keep eating and eating and eating because not only do they get the MSG, but then when they're having GMO, the body doesn't get the nutrients that it needs. And then if you also have vitamins that are synthetic, your body really doesn't get what it needs. So people become obese and they want to overeat and the food becomes expensive because they have to keep buying more food.
Yes.
You know, got to feed the monster, you know?
Yes. Well, I just want to say real quickly, I actually have to run.
I have to
get to the farmer's market. But I wanted to thank both of you, Simon, all of you guys, Ashley, Manny, thank you so much. And I'll probably see you there today.
Yeah, you definitely will. I'll be racing right after the show.
But thank you so much for having me on and for all the listeners. Get educated and you know, really know what you're putting in your body. So thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us, and good luck with your endeavors.
Okay, thank you so much.
And come back on the show later on when you're ready to go with Whole Foods, and we can talk again.
Okay, thank you so much, Ashley and Manny, for having me. I'll see you later, okay?
I'll see you later, Christy.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you so much, honey.
Okay,
Merry Christmas.
Bye. Merry Christmas, too. Okay, bye.
Go ahead.
Do you view the organic movement as one on the rise, on the significant rise?
I would describe it as a huge snowball rolling down the hill, gathering, you know, momentum faster than I even imagined. People are waking up, you know.
I mean, just the fact that the Greenpeace has been able to go to India and start talking to the government to try to get Monsanto's to ban that out of there. I mean, that was one of there was such a huge high number of suicides in India caused by Monsanto. Farmers were killing themselves on a daily basis.
Yes.
And then the food was having
fact,
a horrible effect on people. I'm sorry.
I ended up on some strange mailing list, and boy, it was like every day I'd get this news report of, you know, so many farmers committing suicide. And I was thinking, you know, is this a joke?
No. The rate of farmers in areas, and what makes this, let me point some out, the people who are committing suicide are in areas where there are no other reasons, where there's it's indigenous peoples who aren't corrupted with the other things, where it's just perfectly clear why. They can't do business with Monsanto, then Monsanto controls them because they can only buy their seeds from Monsanto, and then their cotton and other things that die, their cows and cattle eat them, and then they die from eating the genetically modified foods. So, I mean, if your cattle are going to die from them, what's it doing to you? So this whole litany of cascade of problems just bury these people, and they become slaves to Monsanto, which is why, of course, they want to do this. I mean, Monsanto's up to more than 14,000 patents on creating different types of life from plants to things with human beings.
And one of the things that Manny has stopped me from saying that I want to say is that every lab report that I have read where they're creating these seeds in a lab are actually being created, they're cloning. Now, people say, I don't want clones. They are actually ever consistently say clone. They empty the cell out and they put into the DNA what they want to create and then they sterilize the seed. And the biggest thing they put in there, pesticides. They're in the actual plant. You can't wash it out. So, you know, and then so people in India, they try, sometimes they try to grow their own, and Monsanto would come after them saying, you're using our sterile seeds, and sue them. Or they didn't like what was happening with the seeds, and they went about going to plant their own. But still, the, you know, I'm glad Greenpeace is going after Monsanto in India.
Hmm. I know. It really costs it when you think about it. That's really terrible, isn't it?
Oh, it's horrible. I mean, Monsanto very much seemed to have cornered the seed market with their Roundup Ready brands.
Right, and in fact, DuPont recently encroached on that market, and you know what they did? They sued DuPont. So here are the two biggest chemical companies in the world who try to get along because they have common interests, and now they're fighting. And worse than that, DuPont was so angry they went behind Monsanto's back and conducted a huge convention in, I think it was St. Louis, which is where Monsanto is based, with all these Iowa farmers to try to get them to do it and switch to DuPont, and Monsanto went crazy. So now here are these two giants duking it out in a WWF style of lawsuit in court. So, and you know what happens with those lawsuits? Things come out. They get angry. They get out of control, and their documents get released, and it becomes like WikiLeaks. All these reporters swirl around them like sharks, and they find out what they did wrong, which I pointed out to you once with a big lawsuit in Monsanto in Washington, D.C., where they forced to give up their records. Then again in Germany, where Greenpeace sued them, and they had to give up all the research on genetically modified corn, which is how we all found out that it was poisoning animals and people.
And
they're on records.
And the worst part, and I'm going to repeat this every time I talk about these people, there is no human study. We are the human study. So that when I relate things to the rats and the sheep and the rabbits, that's the only place it's been limited to. And as I've said before with GM, with Monsanto, there are no independent studies by them because they themselves are doing their own studies.
I find it shocking, and in fact, rumors that I've heard are that, you know, they'll test something on, let's say, a monkey, and, you know, they get a very adverse reaction, so they go, oh, well, let's try it on a rat, and, you know, the rat is just fine. Oh, well, we'll publish a rat study.
It's the other way. Monkeys don't react to things the same way humans are, despite our similarities. Rats are more similar in the test lab. So when they want to hide tests, they test the monkeys. Or what they do is they pre-screen, if it's a human test, humans by giving them similar allergens. So if you're allergic to regular corn, then they don't want you in the survey with, you know, GMO corn, or if you have a reaction to some other thing or you're allergy prone, you're immediately gone. So they try to manufacture a base of potential test subjects that are perfect and can pass, and then they screw with the amounts, they pick a different placebo, because frequently these tests, the question is, what's the placebo? So if they're comparing you to Bayer aspirin, of course whatever they do is going to be better than Bayer aspirin. So you have to take a look at not only who, but what and how they're going about it.
Right. To me, this goes against the scientific grain. You know, where is the blind study? What happened to that concept?
Well, they're still blind because they just don't use them. And I thought Dr. Dantini pointed this out very, very well. 25 years ago, 20 years ago, all these tests were paid for by the National Institute of Health, which is a government agency, independent one, that tries its best to be neutral. But somewhere along the line, primarily during the Reagan and Bush administrations, they didn't want to spend this money. They wanted to cut back and save money. So guess what they did? They allowed the various drug companies to do their own testing, and which, of course, allowed them that opportunity to play games with the test results. So they fostered an atmosphere that created the level of dishonesty, you know. And, you know, and Ashley talks about this, where, for instance, in India, they did it in a way where the animals grazed on cotton plants after the test, so the test came out very benign, but then all the animals who grazed on the BT, genetically modified cotton plants, thousands of them died. So they gave out this wonderful test result, and then ultimately all the animals weren't around, living around to read it.
Yeah, it only counts if you do it within the test within the first minute, I guess. Okay, they look fine. All right, report's done. Can I have my $1 million to do the next year's test? I mean, that's what comes down to, is coming down to.
And what they've done, you're right, Ash, because what they've done is they've succeeded in corrupting the entire system, and they're making you know, what do you call it, scientists and doctors dependent upon them. So in other words, there's no other, if you don't do the testing for people like Monsanto and Pfizer and all the rest, you're not going to work at all.
And one of the things I want to get back to when we're talking about Christy with the kidney disease, and again, I don't know if I said this or not, where the data from the CDC, it's ranked ninth right now for mortality, kidney disease. It's ninth, Simon. That's
wow.
Huge. That's a large number. And millions of people are suffering from the disease. And one of, with this particular disease that she had, which was the FSGS, is they're finding that the doctors are all saying, we don't know why people are developing it. It's illogical to think, if you're going to have high fructose corn syrup, GMO, and it's going to cause you to have liver failure and liver scarring, and it's going to destroy the pancreas, why then would you think that the GMO foods is not going to affect the kidney, especially since the GMO tests show this? I don't understand why these medical doctors aren't telling their patients, go organic. It's very confusing to me.
Well,
instead, which the most important thing in the organic food are the enzymes to heal the body. So instead they're giving them drugs to block the very thing they need to help heal the kidney.
Right, but, you know, who's driving the cab here?
Right,
you know,
it's back to medical school, and it all gets back to who's paying these doctors at medical school to write prescriptions.
Well, as we point out, the corruption starts early. Harvard Medical School was cited because of an instances where I believe one student started it one day when another student was criticized by a professor, and he did a little homework and found out the professor was being paid by Pfizer to prescribe Lipitor, or convinces the students to prescribe Lipitor once they started practicing medicine. So if you're going to corrupt the school, in fact, Harvard had over 1,800 professors who were taking funds from various drug companies in their work and not disclosing it. So if you're going to do that, you're going to have a corrupt medical system that's totally dependent upon prescribing medicine.
And this particular
isn't Dr. Soy from Harvard?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
But this particular disease, Simon, this particular disease that's very common now, and it's becoming common in children and common in teenagers. Like, that was very common. Her at 16, it's happening at 15-year-olds. And that this is what the doctors are then doing. They're giving them the blocker of the enzyme, and they tell them, you within 3 years are going to need a new kidney, so let's start planning it.
Wow.
No, let's work on your body. I couldn't say with this was her on the show, but this is what I'm reading and what I'm looking at, and I'm horrified. I'm horrified at the university level. They are not, you know, looking at the the toxins within the very food, which is the medicine. The medicine is what you're putting in your body. It's how to make your body function. And if your body isn't going to function, you're going to get scar tissue in those various organs because the body cannot filter, it cannot break down, and it cannot work properly. And I feel horrible that the result is we're going to put you on this, it's going to inhibit it, here, take the synthetic drug. Oh, and then to make matters worse, vitamin B is critical during this time period, B12 the most. So then the doctors give them, in addition to the synthetic that blocks what's going on in badly needed in the body, this enzyme, they then give them a B vitamin that is made from synthetic, whose side effect is, and a lot of the pharmaceutical drugs have this in it, the side effect of this is cyanide. So here's a person who cannot break down. The filtering system is so poor, and especially in a kid. I mean, it brings tears to my eyes because a lot of this can be stopped if they stop and read about, hey, let's take into account Dr. Randolph's environmental medicine. Let's take into account Dr. Dantini, who has done 30 years' worth of research. Let's collect the best heads and the best doctors because we care about people, as opposed to, let me write a prescription. I know what I'm doing.
Ah, but the problem is, money. All right. Who would be willing to fund this kind of activity? Certainly not drug companies.
Well, part of it is, no, better still, who is willing to stand up to the drug companies? In other words, take a stand and make some statement that what they're doing is wrong or suggest some other treatment. And doctors who suggest some other form of treatment are not only ostracized, frequently they're successful in getting, for example, the various licensing the companies go after. There's a doctor, I'm thinking as I'm talking and not clearly, there's a doctor in New York, a city named Gonzalez, who at some point when he was a medical student was sent to Texas to study a Dr. Kelly, who found that enzymes cured cancer, one of the theories of my book, and a theory that Ash and I developed in our later books. And what happened was, the minute he started giving these special treatments and advocating this, they tried to disbar him because he didn't believe in the traditional medicine that the AMA wanted.
It was Dr. Kelly, and then Dr. Gonzalez confirmed
it. Yeah, he confirmed it, but it's Dr. Gonzalez who was experienced all of the nightmares recently in regard to the AMA and other people going after him because he doesn't believe in what they believe in, and that's not tolerated.
And for the doctors who say there's no scientific data with the research that he did with enzymes and cancer and all of these illnesses that all tie together from the enzymes, that's the connector right there, the enzymes. And for them to go after him and say there's no scientific data, there's 10,000 patients. A lot of these tests that we're looking at, they'll say, oh, we had, 50 people in our group, and we picked them. Okay, now that's scientific data, and 10,000 people that have had research done who have been proven that the enzymes work and these various vitamins work. What's wrong with that program, Simon?
Well, Simon, you remember in our book where we talk about red yeast rice.
And
they tried to ban it in the United States and said, well, there isn't sufficient testing to determine whether it works. You know, and I said to a doctor who said that to me once, really? So you don't consider 1,200 years in China and 6 billion people a sufficient test to prove that it works? This is a natural product that comes off of off of rice that they've been giving to their children, and they give it to them after every meal. So out of one side of the mouth, they say China has the lowest amount of people who have some form of heart disease.
Or high cholesterol.
High cholesterol, too. And the other side of the mouth, they slam the cause. And why do they slam the cause? Because the fact is that they're trying to sell Lipitor, and red yeast rice is basically the natural statin drug. So
one's organic, the other one's synthetic, made up in a lab.
Right. In fact, I think it might have been last week or the week before, you made a rather acerbic comment that, there are natural remedies, and as soon as one's found, the first thing they do is take it into the lab and create a synthetic version so they can patent it.
Absolutely.
Well, that's exactly what they did with red-yeast rice. And by the way, Zantac and all Nexium, all these antacids are really synthetic versions of the enzymes that I suggest in our book you take every day. So when you talk about the expense of our diet, going and buying Prevacid, Nexium, Zantac, all these drugs is far more expensive than taking the natural enzymes that God made through nature.
Plus, you and I don't have any medical bills anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, here I was in complete organ failure with no medical bills, and I'm not on any medication. Okay, can somebody please say, use me as a scientific data. There you go. How about that, Simon?
Yeah. Some guy said to me, How do you know it works? And I said, well, I'm alive. Twice doctors have told me I've had 2 years to live, and I'm still alive. That's a pretty
and cancer-free, you know.
And cancer-free.
I doubt that any industry-funded study would want to talk to either of you.
Yeah.
You know, you're right, Simon.
Time is slipping away, and it's Christmas. And Ashley had a wonderful Christmas story for all of our listeners that I would think would be wonderful to end the show. And, Ashley, I wish you'd repeat this story. It's a story that everyone in America should think of and remember.
Well, this started when I was saying to Manny that we should talk about this because I was watching on TV kids writing in that they wanted toys and they wanted things for Christmas. And so this was a reminder of an old time from the Depression story. And it's a true story. And this is a story about a man named Bob May. And he was depressed. He was brokenhearted. And he stared out his drafty apartment window in the chilly December night in Chicago. And he was sitting in his chair rocking. His four-year-old daughter, Barbara, sat on his lap quietly, and she was sobbing. Bob's wife, Evelyn, Barbara's mother, was dying of cancer. Little Barbara couldn't understand why her mommy could never come home. So she looked up into her daddy's face, and she said, "Why isn't mommy just like everybody else's mommy?" And Bob's jaw tightened and his eyes welled up with tears. Her question brought waves of grief, but also anger. He'd been in the story of Bob's life. His entire life, Bob was different. Bob was a small, puny little kid. He was bullied by the boys. He was too little at time to compete in sports. He was often called names he'd rather not remember. So from childhood, Bob was different and never seemed to fit in. Bob did complete college. He married his loving wife, Evelyn, and he was grateful to get his job as a copywriter at Montgomery Ward's during the Great Depression. And then he was blessed with his little girl, Evelyn. But it was all short-lived. Evelyn's bout with cancer stripped them of all their savings, and now Bob and his daughter were forced to live in a two-room apartment in the Chicago slums. Evelyn died just days before Christmas in 1938. Bob struggled to give hope to his child, for whom he couldn't even afford to buy a Christmas gift. But he couldn't buy a gift, and he thought he was determined to make one. So he said, "I'm going to make a storybook." And in his mind, while he was rocking his daughter night after night, caressing her, saying, "You know," he came up with an animal character in his mind, and he told the animal story to little Barbara to give her comfort and hope. Throughout that entire year, one year, he embellished it more and more in telling the story to uplift his daughter. And who was his character? Who was the story about? The story was Bob May created. It was his autobiography of the fable form. The character he created was a misfit outcast like he was. And the name of the character, a little reindeer named Rudolph, with a big red shiny nose. Bob finished the book just in time to give it to his little girl that Christmas, and she got it that day, but the story doesn't end there. The general manager of Montgomery Ward caught wind of the little story and offered Bob May a nominal fee to purchase the rights to print the book. Ward's went on to print Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer and distributed to children visiting Santa in their store. By 1946, Ward's had printed and distributed more than 6 million copies of Rudolph. That same year, a major publisher came in and purchased the rights from Ward's to print an updated version of the book. Now, the CEO of Ward's did something of the most kind thing. He returned all the rights back to Bob May. The book became a bestseller, as we all know. Many toys, marketing deals followed, and Bob May, now remarried with a growing family, became wealthy from the story he created to comfort his grieving daughter. But the story doesn't end there either. Bob May's new brother-in-law, Johnny Marks, made a song adaptation to Rudolph. The song had been turned down by Bing Crosby, Dinah Shore. It reached Gene Autry, the singing cowboy, and he said, "I'm going to record this." Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, released in 1949, became a phenomenal success, selling more records than any other Christmas song with the exception of White Christmas. The gift of love that Bob May created for his daughter so long ago kept on returning back to bless him again and again. Bob May learned the lesson, just like his dear friend Rudolph, that being different isn't so bad. In fact, being different can be a blessing. We wish you a very Merry Christmas.
That is a great, great story.
You know, Simon, you and I had a talk also about Christmas for the troops and the importance of getting Christmas cards.
I don't want to forget one single soldier or one single person or family who has a son or a daughter or someone they dearly love in the military right now.
And Simon, do you have that information? Ashley,
I do, right here.
Oh, Ashley has it. We hope everybody will take the time and send at least one or two cards to this address so a soldier who may or not have family or may get only one thing for Christmas gets at least a card from one American who deeply cares. Go ahead, Ash.
It's a recovering American soldier, care of Walter Reed Army Medical Center, 6900 Georgia Avenue, Northwest, Washington, D.C., 20307-5001. And just while you're writing your card, send one card. You know, send two, send cards. You know, bring a smile to somebody and let them know that they're loved and cared and we respect them.
I do want to encourage all of our listeners to do that. I'm sure that you have your box of Christmas cards. Invest 44 cents on a stamp. Send it to someone you don't know.
But he's American. He's an American. We all know him. Or her.
Actually, I saw a piece, I think it was on CNN, about a lady who is now in her 80s, and she made a point of sending letters and Christmas cards to troops around the world. She'd never met them, but she did it for, decades. And alas, now she's a little too old to participate. But the news story actually featured a retired Army colonel who came across her letter not very long ago, and he said, "Boy, I really need to reach out and thank this lady." And he found her, and it was just the most delightful reunion.
I saw the show too, Simon. I thought it was an extraordinarily touching show and thoughtful one.
Yes, it was.
Sometimes we don't see one of the little things we do can cause so much change and good in our society. So this is an opportunity for all of us to do that little bit extra.
Right.
And for me, this Christmas, I am so glad and grateful that my husband is well and that I'm alive and he's alive. And when I wake up Christmas Day, that's what Christmas Day is to me. I'm actually alive and I can see and walk and I got the gift of living.
So
indeed.
On that note, we want We want everybody to have a healthy, wonderful Christmas, and please give some thoughts to the subjects we've discussed with Simon. It could change your life. It certainly has changed ours, and we want everybody to get up and be healthy and break this trend that is gripping America. We need to get healthy.
And with that, we do need to wrap it up for the day. My producer is screaming in my ear.
I'm sure.
Merry Christmas.
Happy New Year.
And
to all of you tonight.
And to all our listeners, remember to listen in on Tuesday. It will be a slightly different program.
Certainly different than this. Merry Christmas.
Okay, till next time, this is Simon Barrett wishing everyone a great weekend, a very happy Christmas. We'll talk again soon. Goodbye.